tell us about the indemnification fund, because that's been a point of concern for producers. How much have you spent already, and is all of it expended that you expect to be expended?
Based on what we know today, we expect the indemnification to be around $191 million. Of that amount, $183 million, I believe, has been disbursed. So a substantial percentage of the indemnification resource has been spent. What hasn't necessarily been totally spent or invested is the cleanup and disinfection efforts. We're in the process of doing that. We anticipate $350 to $400 million in that space as well. Then there's the issue of the vaccine and basically setting aside enough resource to be able to put together a stockpile of vaccine once we determine that a vaccine is 100% effective for chickens and turkeys.
Can you give us a time frame on that vaccine availability, ETA, that sort of thing?
Well, the good news is that we've got the seed strain, which is basically the foundation for a vaccine that is 100% effective for chickens. We don't know what the impact is for turkeys. We've given that seed strain to one company under a licensing agreement. They are going to do some additional tests, and then they'll begin the process of producing it. I don't want to say exactly how long that's going to take, but I'll tell you, we're in a much better space than we were, say, 6 months ago or 6 weeks ago, when all we had was a vaccine that was 60% effective, and that's really not good enough. You need something that's 100% effective.
Is everyone back in business by the end of summer optimistic? It sounds like quite a few facilities are a ways away.
Not necessarily. We're seeing, the control areas in Minnesota, with the exception of a couple, have been lifted, and we'll begin to see that same kind of effort here in Iowa. Assuming there's not a reemergence, assuming there, that we don't have a situation that we're not anticipating at this point. So I think it's fair to say that hopefully by the end of September, we're in a position where we're ready to restock in facilities.
You talked about reemergence quite a bit. What's the scientific knowledge that you have about reemergence occurring? When time frame? Is it just when cooler weather gets here?
We're planning for the fall because that may be when it would reemerge, and we're making sure that we are in a position to deal with a reemergence in the 21 states that have been impacted, and potentially a handful of states that might experience it for the first time. I asked the team to basically put together a planning based on worst-case scenario, which they are doing, and basically go through each and every step that would be required to respond to multiple incidences occurring at the same time in multiple states.
What's that include? I mean, it includes what, hiring part-time people or temporary veterinarians?
We have pretty much the staff right now with the contractors that we put on staff. Again, we've significantly increased the workforce. It isn't so much that. It's understanding the indemnification system and working the bugs out of that, understanding what works in terms of depopulation and what's the most effective, efficient, humane way to do that, pre-placing or at least having conversations about where you might be able to dispose of birds if you have to landfill them, working with incineration companies to make sure that we have more effective incineration capacity. So it's all of that pre-planning that often goes into disasters of another sort, similar to what Governor Branstad said, is that, this is a disaster, but it's a unique disaster. And so some of the rules that you use and disasters you use for this one, in some cases you're making a process as you go, as you learn. That's why we're surveying the state veterinarians. That's why we're doing these listening sessions. That's why we've had the work groups. That's why we brought the international community to Baltimore. 37 countries came to, representatives came to the U.S. to discuss AI. This isn't just a domestic issue. It's not just a U.S. issue. It's also an international issue. And we have to work collaboratively together to try to figure this out. The challenge with this is that it mutates. It changes. It literally changes as it migrates across the country. So that's why it's a bit of a challenge.
And how long do you expect the bans to last?
Presidential disaster request was turned down, and did you have any input into that?
Well, Rod, I don't want to diminish the impact and effect on individual producers or on individual folks who've lost their job, but in terms of a presidential disaster declaration, it really does require a really significant impact where you're basically having a city destroyed as a result of a tornado or flood, where you have significant disruption across a large geographic area. Candidly, most of what can be done for folks who are unemployed can be done under the existing systems. Most of what can be done for producers in terms of disaster loans, in terms of credit, in terms of indemnification can be done without a presidential declaration. The issue involving the Department of Transportation, I don't know, but I suspect could probably be done on an ad hoc basis. So I'm not sure that there would have been a lot gained from that, and I'm pretty sure that it didn't meet the threshold for a presidential declaration. But again, this administration has responded by hiring 3,000 additional people, by spending and investing over $700 million, that there is no law directing us to do this. We're doing it because it's the right thing to do.
How long do you expect trade bans to continue?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer because you're dealing with over 50, 56 different countries with different attitudes about trade and different attitudes about why they impose bans. You know, the Chinese, for example, that ban may be in place not because of AI, but because of some other consideration, political consideration. The challenge here is for us to make sure that we continue to work to make sure that the bulk of trade recognizes there is no need for a countrywide ban, and to work very collaboratively with our trading partners that if we decide to vaccinate, that they don't basically conclude from that the entire industry is in a bad situation, that it's just simply a specific area, a specific operation that needs that. We're going to continue to work. I'll have a better read on this after folks get back from the various trips that are going to take place in the next couple weeks.
If the disease reemerges in the fall, will we have more than three landfills able to take the birds? Will South Dakota and Nebraska, will they help us out?
I don't know the answer to that question today. Our focus has been on states, frankly, where they've not been hit with AI. Making sure that we identify landfills there and beginning the conversation. You know, I think that we're at a different comfort level now in the state of Iowa in terms of landfills. I think people understand and appreciate now. The law that was passed by the legislature probably made things easier as well. So I don't, you know, I'm just not sure that we got an issue here today in Iowa. The focus is what happens in North Carolina, what happens in Georgia. What happens in the East Coast, which has not yet been hit by this, where the numbers in Iowa, while they're very significant, if it hits the East Coast, our numbers will look fairly small.
Do you have any sense of if this moves somewhere else to the East Coast, I mean, what kind of cost and devastation you might be?
It'd be purely speculative.
Under that worst case scenario that you guys are...
Well, it would be purely speculative because we're dealing with a number of facilities. I don't know that we're necessarily determining what the size of each facility is. We're saying if so many facilities get hit simultaneously, what would we do? How would we handle it? You know, we'll obviously do what we can to help folks, and we'll do it as quickly as we can, and we'll provide the indemnification on a fair and reasonable and equitable basis. Money's not an issue here in the sense that the ability to get the resources, it's under Section 32, under the CCC, it's a fairly significant resource that's available to us. So it's not like we need Congress to appropriate money. It's not like we have to go through an elaborate process to get the resources. I do think we would be better off as a nation, and certainly for poultry producers, if we could have a disaster program similar to what we have for livestock producers, because that would create predictability. Right now, if a producer gets hit, he's got to go to his banker or she's got to go to her lender and say, this is going to get worked out, the government's going to help, and that lender doesn't have a program that they can point to say, okay, like a livestock producer has. We need that. We proposed it. The Congress decided not to do it because it cost more than they wanted to save a certain amount of money in the farm bill, and it would have cut into those savings.
One last question.
How can we promise consumers if we start vaccinating poultry that it'll be safe for them?
Well, there's not a health issue here. And it's very, very important for everybody to understand this. This is an animal health issue. It's not a human health issue. So that's just not the issue here.
So it couldn't impact them.
We're not going to let food that's unsafe get to the public, okay? So that's not going to happen. And it is important for people to understand that AI is animal health. It is not human health. Now, people may say, well, but over in Asia, it's different because the poultry are being raised actually in the homes of people who live with the poultry. It's not that they have a separate facility. They actually raise the chickens in their home. and that creates an issue. But that's not the situation here, and it won't be the situation.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.